Welcome to another edition of We the People. Your regular host, Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff, are away this week. And we have our special guest host in joining us today, Vint Stevenson. Vint, I'll let you take it from here, and you can tell listeners who aren't familiar with you what you're all about.
All right. I appreciate it, Bob. Thanks. Hey, guys, first let me throw out a big thank you to Aaron and Bill for allowing us to have this spot. I think it allowed them to get away for a while, which is a good thing. Last time I heard from Aaron, she was test driving Kubotas somewhere. So shout out to Aaron. Thanks again, and we'll do the best we can. What we're going to spend a couple hours doing today is looking deep into our souls, our community soul, and trying to figure out exactly who we are and where we stand at the moment. That's a very important question for a lot of people right now, because there are a lot of people who really haven't paid attention, and I will throw myself in that bucket. I obviously was focused on my family. I was focused on business, taking care of things that, you know, obviously our everyday activities require and force us to endure. And I really wasn't paying attention to what was happening within our community. Well, a couple of years ago, I actually began to wake up and realize that, you know, everything wasn't as peachy as it was being proclaimed to be. It was being portrayed as a, you know, work in progress, and we've got this, don't worry about it. Well, as a financial planner and a person who has clients that are going to rely on this community and the obligation of the unfunded pensions and all the other things that are going on, I begin to realize that they don't have it. And quite frankly, it's not only at a point where it's truly unsustainable. And maybe we'll do a counting game and see how many times today in the next 2 hours we can use the word unsustainable. Because that's going to be something that really is going to be driven home. Because if everybody was here, and when I say everybody, I mean city council members and city managers and finance department and so on, and we are all in the room together, that is a word that we would all have to agree on. That would be an absolute that we could then begin to kind of build our arguments and our expectations off of, because we truly are in an unsustainable environment right now. Our budget, our expectations, our projections, they're all very, very negative. And this is something that we'll be deficit spending, as City Manager Barry Tippin proclaimed to the council members and has also made very clear in a number of different other scenarios and situations that we are going to be deficit spending. Originally, he had said that it looked like about 16 months. Well, that was 2 or 3 months ago. So we're down to about 12, 13 months. So basically this time next year, we're going to be looking at the books. And that's if nothing happens, nothing additional negative. Now, for those of you who follow the market, this is the third largest bull market we've ever had in our history. So most of you are very aware of the fact that we have a nice adjustment. Seems like within every decade, we're at that point. It could happen anytime. And, you know, with basic information that comes across every single day from Washington, D.C., and from our very objective media sources, they're out there telling us daily that, you know, this tax isn't going to pass and the health care is going to fall through and this person's selling off assets to foreign nations, and all these things are obviously building up. All these things are putting us in a position to where it could actually cause an adjustment just about at any given time. So what would happen with that adjustment? What would the impacts be? Well, that's a guess for many people. For those of us who look into it daily and are portraying this activity, it's something that we definitely see as a negative, and it's something that could set us in a negative trend that could cause a very significant adjustment in the market. So what would that do to our obligation? Well, that would obviously exacerbate it. That would make it worse. That would put us in a scenario where we'd be paying more. And what does more mean for a lot of people? Well, right now, you can absolutely lock in, bet your neighbor, do whatever it is that you feel comfortable doing, that we are going to pay at least $2.4 million more each year for the next 4 years. So $2.4 million next year, $4.8 million the next year, $7.2 million the next year, so on, when it comes to unfunded pensions, because we've got to catch up. We have to be able to basically say that we are making ground on a very large debt, this unfunded debt obligation. How big is it? Well, if we were going to pay it off over the next 30 years, it would be roughly $597 million. $597 million. I'm not sure how many people can really wrap themselves around that, how big that is and how much of a deterrent that's going to be. But you got to remember, if we are already in a situation where our obligations or our debt load and our budget is going into deficit spending, imagine adding another $2.4 million each year to that. That means our economy somehow either has to grow to meet that requirement, or we have to make some cuts. So what would you like to cut? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We need something. We need some business shot of adrenaline, or we need some serious cuts. For some of you, we may be talking about Chico. Chico, back in 2012, they made some cuts. They brought in a city manager that's what he was there for. He was a reform city manager. He was going to be there a short period of time, but his job was not to make friends. His job was to get that community back on track. Now, are they back on track and are they fiscally healthy? That's obviously an argument that we could have, but they're not as bad as we are. At least their projections aren't as bad. So where we would be deficit spending in 12 to 14 months, it sounds like they're going to be deficit spending in the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know, is it bad? Yes, but is it as bad as we are? No, it's not. So let's basically break this down in a couple different ways. Let's talk about where we are in this first half hour. Talk about what we're experiencing, some of the things that you're being asked to endure on a daily basis. And then let's begin to kind of break down some of the mistakes that have been made. And you know what, guys? We're going to talk some of the things that we're going to potentially have to endure moving forward. What would bankruptcy look like? That's a word nobody likes to hear. But quite frankly, it's something that Stockton, Vallejo, a number of different cities have already gone through. And if you haven't heard yet, some of those cities are going to go through them again. So very difficult time for a lot of different communities. And there is a common denominator amongst a lot of these municipalities that are actually being forced to endure this, and that is unfunded pensions. So we're going to continue to talk about what that means. For a lot of you, the big issue around crime, where does the crime actually come into this? And what the connection is to the unfunded pensions and what we can do about them. So moving forward, let's do this. Let's just break it down pretty simply as to where we're at, where we are currently. Let's pull some statistics from anything from the city website to anywhere else you want to be. So if you're one of those amateur researchers out there that love to dig into things, this is your day. So give us a call at 605-4567, and we'll start digging into this one by one. So looking forward to it, guys. Soul, then it's just your body, then they go,
Now back to We the People and your special guest host, Bent Stevenson.
Hey, guys. I got somebody in the studio with me, Robert Balky. You guys can blame him for everything. So go ahead, Robert.
It's all my fault.
Say hello to everybody.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Some of you guys would recognize him. He's normally wearing that green shirt, going around doing great things in the community. Part of Shasta Support Services.
Yep. Always involved in the community. That's what we're about.
That is an absolute understatement. Absolutely. All right, guys, we're gonna shift gears just a little bit. Some people have been asking a lot of questions lately around what are those people out there gathering signatures for? Now, I say that with a grain of salt because obviously for those that are paying attention and are focused on what's going on in the community and what people in the community are being asked to endure, they know it's the recall. They know it is a situation where Francie Sullivan and Kristen Schrader are being asked to step away and let some people in there that actually have the skills to make some changes that would be very positive and will help our community become more sustainable. There goes that unsustainable form again. That's like five already, isn't it, guys? Come on. So unsustainable. There's six. Basically, that's what the recall is about. But you know what? Let's talk about what it means to different people. Robert, why are you helping out with the recall?
Just for the simple fact of making the change in the community. I feel like leadership in the city of Reading needs change. We need some people that are going to step up and actually, you know, step up to the plate and do something. Less talk, more action would be great for me.
Outstanding. Yeah, and that seems to be a very consistent message. You've got a lot of people right now that are, you know, basically hearing that so much is going on or that people are participating, but we don't see it. We don't, you know, and I don't mean it's just behind the scenes happening because there is some happening. I'll give credit where credit is due. But quite frankly, for the longest time, it was very little, if anything.
Right.
A real special and strong message that was sent pretty consistently that was became a very sensitive area for a lot of us was studies. Let's study it. Study it. How much is that going to cost? Oh, only $150,000, something like that.
No big deal,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? When you're handing out raises to, you know, some city managers and so on at the pace of about four every 18 months,
right?
Then you know, yeah,
it's
they're
no
already
big deal.
They're all making, you know, $150,000, $250,000, $200,000. You know, what's $150,000 to study something?
Right. It's nothing.
Yeah,
dropping a hat.
And then after we get the study done, well, what are we going to do with it?
Huh?
Can
Let's
anybody look
study
at it?
The study.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know what? Does anybody else want to study it? You can't. Forget it.
Yeah.
And that's
not
what.
You can't even look at it.
Yeah, you can't. You know what? Unless you sue us. Thank you, Record Searchlight. Unless you sue us, we're not even going to let you check this thing out. So, you know, this is kind of what we're up against right now, guys. The idea of bad optics has been taken to an absolute new level. So let's imagine that we've put out a measure D and E, we'll call them.
Right.
And we'll say, we want more money out of your pocket. We haven't learned to budget correctly. We haven't learned to actually do things that are impactful, that will address some of the issues that you as citizens are going through. But we want more of your money,
yeah,
so
please.
Maybe we'll figure it out. And then after the taxpayers say no, a resounding no, you know, 66% or whatever it was, no. Then they say, well, you know what? One week after, they say, you know what? Let's give our managers a raise then.
Let's give $1,000 a month raise.
We'll teach those taxpayers a lesson or two. We'll give raises. That's a good idea.
We'll get money out of them no matter what.
So what does that mean as a taxpayer in this community? What does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it just pisses me off, really. It just makes me mad. Like, let's just be honest.
If you haven't been listening, prior to us coming on, they had another group that was in here, and they were all talking about the impacts of the Wiener conviction and the fact that he's going to jail and what he's probably going to experience why he's in jail. And it basically just cracked me up listening to, you know, all the things that they thought of. But you could tell that there was – there was some anger behind it.
Right.
And basically that's what, I'm not sure if you, did you sense that from people that were coming up to and signing the?
Oh, yeah, signing the petitions. Yeah, they're mad. They're not happy with the way City of Reading is conducting, you know, business. They're ready for change.
Isn't it fascinating? Now, what do you see that, like, let's say, what's another, how about Anderson?
Mm-hmm.
Anderson's a good example of a different flip to this, basically a 180.
Right.
So tell me some things at Anderson, what they're doing down there that looks good.
Oh, I mean, the list is really endless. I've had to come to the point where I've had to tell people I don't like to compare Reading to Anderson anymore because it's like apples to oranges.
Do it anyway.
Yeah, do it anyways. Anderson's on the ball. Like we've got city council, we've got Baron Browning is our mayor, and he puts up with nothing. He's there to make Anderson, you know, the
former Jarhead though.
he's there to make Anderson a great place, a great community. He wants to clean up any issues. APD, you know, they don't mess around either. They're everywhere doing everything involved.
Mike Johnson.
With everything. Yeah, they were at the, what was it, the Harvest Festival type mm-hmm. thing at the school, you know, with the kids and canine demonstrations. You know, Anderson's just, they're really involved. City Council is really involved. We have City Council members from Anderson that come to our cleanups for Shasta Support Service.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course, you know, supervisors as well. But, We don't have anybody from Reading City Council coming to do cleanups or safety walks or, you know, involved in the community with our volunteer aspects.
Would you consider them transparent?
Yeah.
Would you consider them accountable?
Definitely. Okay. Yeah, definitely.
This is what I'm basically getting at is there are a lot of things going on, but you know what? We can narrow it down to a couple things that are tremendous issues for us. When it comes to Reading currently and what we've been experiencing over the last couple of years, we have a transparency and accountability issue.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will say, well, you know, we could still do good things with this. This is what exactly leads to a lack of trust. Because all you have to do is make one mistake, whether that was intentional or not.
Right.
And you, if you're living in an environment where you don't allow transparency and you don't see the accountability that's necessary, then all of a sudden you begin to believe that everything is happening in the back room. If I went out right now, what do you think the percentage would be out there on the sidewalk if I asked 10 people, is the city leadership, are they doing things behind the scenes that we don't get to see? What do you think the percentage would be that would say absolutely yes?
No, I bet it's a high percentage. 90%, I would say, yeah. And then 10% probably don't even have any clue what the leadership is.
The other one's really focused on that marijuana law and whether or not they're going to get things
exactly.
done. So,
yeah,
and even that might be going on behind the scenes. So, yeah. So the simple fact is when it comes to these kinds of things, everything really comes down to that. You know what? If Barry Tippin were in the room right now with us and he was saying, you know what, we have to do this because, and making it very clear and basically showing us what's behind the curtain and helping us understand that we're going to be devastated. We're at a point right at the moment where if we do not make some adjustments and we do not do these things, we're unsustainable. There's like number
right.
eight. If we don't do these things, we're going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think people would be much more receptive to the idea of, oh, okay, now I see why you got to do it. And I see we're forced to do it. It's not like you want to do it or you're trying to do it for, you know, some ulterior motive or some agenda that you've got. This is just self-survival at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to throw one of the people off the raft. Well, it's not because, you know, we want that person's, voice to be maybe not heard anymore, which might be the case. But no, it's just basically we only have so much to go around. And I use this analogy because that's kind of where we're at, ladies and gentlemen. If you're out there listening, we have a limited budget. We know that budget is going to be less than what is required or more than what is actually available in the city coffers.
Right.
So we're going to be at a point where we're going to be deficit spending, and it's
mm-hmm.
going to happen within the next 13 months, and we're done. That's
yeah,
it. So basically, there's some people that are in the life raft right now that have to go. And
yep.
So, you know what? We're at that point where we're going to have to decide because our ability to ramp up our business, to fill up Stillwater Business Park overnight, that's probably not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. So
no,
you know what? Those are your two options. Don't look for Sacramento to solve, because, quite frankly, they've got hundreds of billions in unfunded pensions.
Right.
Don't look for the national government, or, you know, don't you dare, if you're out there and you wear blue, don't ask for Trump to help you, because that's not going to happen. And let's be fair. I mean, they've got a $6, $7 trillion problem of their own. To let you know how bad this is, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which for a lot of you is your safety net, that is your insurance company that guarantees pensions, they say that they've got another 6 to 7 years left, and then they're going under.
Oh, well.
So this is a problem that's ramping up on a lot of different people. So, I mean, we're at that point, guys, where it's time to basically circle the wagons, realize that we're going to have to solve for ourselves. It's going to take everyone. It's going to take compromise. It's going to take everyone realizing you're not going to get everything you want, period.
Right.
So now how do we make sure the ship stays afloat? So then we can save as many people as we possibly can. That's it. That's the basic premise behind this. So recall. Recall was put out there for a couple of different reasons. One, to basically set the tone that, you know what, we're in a bad situation. We need help. We need it immediately. We have a trust issue. So we want accountability. We want transparency. We have two initiatives that will be introduced this year for the ballot. One is the REU Advisory Council, bringing it back, but bringing it back in a different way. You might ask, who got rid of it? Well, look at the recall ballot. You'll see exactly who got rid of it. So basically, the idea is to bring it back, but bring it back with some teeth. So this isn't going to be mom and dad's REU Advisory Council. This is going to be an REU Advisory Council that has a voice and has some bite behind it. Quite frankly, we're at a stage where that municipality needs to be for the people and by the people. It belongs to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? We're going to bring it back with some power. Secondly, we're going to bring in the COIN initiative. These are all things that you can vote for to give yourself transparency and accountability. The COIN initiative is a requirement that all labor negotiations happen in open session. So for those of you who are untrusting and refuse to believe that they're doing anything that is in your best interest, when they obligate you, they're going to have to do it in open session. So if you take a little time away from your Bonanza reruns and some of the other things that you're doing, you can come on down and you can listen to them as they negotiate those things. These are things that are a must. The pendulum has swung so far towards one side that people do not trust anymore.
Right.
And so we're going to have to allow it to naturally swing back, and it's going to swing pretty far. And then hopefully at some point we'll settle in the middle. But at this stage, trust is gone, and we're going to have to rebuild it. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, we're doing our best. So when it comes to the recall itself, why do you think people are – there's obviously a group out there that's bucking the system. What's your thoughts? What do you think is the reason they're bucking? Why are they putting up a headwind?
I think their biggest headwind against the recall.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to say cost.
Okay.
You know, I think that's the biggest thing that I've heard out gathering signatures and talking to people is, well, what's it going to cost? You know, we've got the two recall candidates that we are trying to take out of city council or putting out there that it'll cost $200,000, $250,000, $287,000. I mean, really, I don't think they have a clue what it will cost, but they've put out that number as a scare tactic, and it's worked for a percentage of people. And until you're able to sit down and talk with them and really talk numbers with them and say, you know, $200,000, even if it did cost $200,000, really, it's not that much considering what they've spent on nothing.
Yeah.
You know, I say just keep pushing forward. The recall is going to happen.
Well, the budget that was passed in July, the new one that was initiated, it went up $7.4 million, I believe it was, 7.4 or 7.6. So if you broke that down for every 2 weeks, and I used every 2 weeks because that's city council meetings are every 2 weeks, if you broke it down, it would only take 2 weeks and it would be paid for. So seems like a small, reasonable price to pay.
Looks like a win.
There you go. But the other part is when you begin to break down their numbers, I mean, you've got a lot of people from the county that the city would then have to refer, you know, give that money back to. basically, they are on salary anyway. They're going to be full-time employees anyway. So you're going to pay those people anyway. Now, are they taken away from their other duties to work on this? Yeah, but that is part of their duty. So,
right.
You know, when it comes to breaking down that cost, and then the idea of maybe doing a mail-in ballot, well, that's, you know, $30,000, $40,000.
Right.
So that doesn't really look at that $200,000 mark. So, yeah, I mean, there's a number of things that we look at. But the premise is, if that's the only thing that is holding you back from supporting putting good people in office that can do the job, then you really have to search your soul.
Right.
Because quite frankly, guys, we're in deep trouble. We need changes right now. And you're saying $200,000 is too much.
Right.
Well, did you say that when they spent $155,000 on a study?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that when they were spending $1 million a year just keeping a empty business park alive? Did you say that when they gave money to the parks a raise of $1,000 a month?
Did
you? I mean, I could do this all day long.
Mm-hmm.
The number of things that they've spent money on and approved for, things that there was no way we were going to be able to afford them. Now we're taking donations from churches, from casinos, from anything, and don't get me wrong, guys. I'm going to put this disclaimer in there right now. I appreciate what these institutions are doing to try
right.
to help.
Mm-hmm.
They're all on board, and they're trying to get it done. And as long as there's no, you know, deal behind the scene, here we go, in back room
deals.
I'm totally good with these contributions. But the simple fact is, guys, it's time to search your souls and realize what it is we're trying to accomplish and why. So let's bring it back up after the break.
You're listening to We the People. Special guest host Vint Stevenson in for Aaron and Bill today here on AM 1460 KCNR.
A lady that I know just came from Colombia. She smiled because I did not understand. Then she held out some marijuana. She said it was the best in all the land. And I said, no, 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 I don't smoke it no more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. No thank you please, it only makes me sneeze. Then it makes it hard to find a door.
Hey guys, hey, we left off with a couple things on the recall. I wanted to follow up a little bit and just kind of make sure that everyone's on the same page. Again, we get asked a lot as to why or why not. What are the issues behind the recall and why did we start it from the beginning? All those kinds of great things. But the simple fact is, we looked at the people who were on the council currently. We looked at the activity and the actions that they had been given, and then we looked at, all right, what are the areas that we could make the biggest impact in? We have some people who have worked, for the most part, their entire lives in some form of public service, which is, you know, fantastic, good for you. But quite frankly, we looked at it more from the perspective of a CEO. Are the people that you have managing for you, are they people who are well-equipped to do the job? And quite frankly, we found that there were at least two that were not equipped, that did not have what we felt was the proper skills to deal with this. We needed business people. We needed people who have become accustomed and have it as a second nature to balance the budget, to hire people and understand what it is that they're looking for as far as the skills, and don't feel like their only tool is to give more raises or to offer more than any other municipality. Quite frankly, we're at a point where we can't afford to compete that way. So we looked at that and understood that, you know what, there's a couple people that probably should leave and allow some people in that can do some real solid work and put us back on a sustainable mechanism. And that's I'm gonna mark that as number 10 because sustainable and unsustainable, we're gonna use them pretty consistently together. And then the last part was, I just wanted to make sure everyone understood this is nothing personal about these people. If they happen to be good friends, we're a small community, so a lot of these people are friends, are people that we've participated in a lot of groups and so on. It would be like somebody coming up to you at your job and saying, you know what, I'm sorry, you're just not doing a good enough job. Nothing personal, but I'm going to have to replace you with somebody who I feel like can do the job. And, you know, that's basically the premise. And in this case, we have two people that, nothing personal, but you need to go. So we've got some business people who are stepping up, some people who basically have a great understanding as to what's needed, and we feel like they have the fortitude to make things happen and make some changes occur. We heard the misogyny argument thrown out there quite a bit.
Right.
You know, you're only picking on them because they're ladies. Well, some of the candidates that are now stepping up, guess what? They're ladies themselves, but they're also business people, and they're also people who balance budgets and so on. So your argument kind of, it's just lame. All right, so let's just make it clear. The simple fact is, guys, we need some changes. We need them quick if we're going to save this. Now, what happens if we don't make changes? Well, I brought in, some of you already know him, Michael DeQuisto. He is an attorney here in town, and we're going to talk about worst-case scenario. Worst-case scenario, Mike, welcome. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad you brought me in on the worst-case scenario.
Appreciate that.
It's a heck of a way to start your show.
Tell us about a municipal bankruptcy.
So just for a little bit of background, I've been a bankruptcy trustee since 1997, and I've had my own business and worked in that business for a long time. Bankruptcy basically is two separate forms. One is you sell the property and use the money to pay the creditors. The other form in general is that you take your income that you have coming in and you work out a different plan to pay your creditors. And a municipal bankruptcy would be the second type of bankruptcy. You wouldn't sell the property. You would just give the entity time to rework its contracts. The principal contract that you have a problem with, and the reason these municipal bankruptcies have been filed up to now, are the unfunded pensions. And the heart of the dispute in those matters is CalPERS. And CalPERS' position is, we are a separate governmental entity. We're like the state. And therefore, we have certain rights that the bankruptcy court is not allowed to mess with or to change. And the position of the cities is, no, the bankruptcy court has the ability to essentially rewrite any contract in the world. And it can go do that. And so people say, well, how can you rewrite a contract? Well, in Chapter 11 cases where a business files and they want to change what they owe and do this and that, judges rewrite contracts all the time. In Chapter 7 cases, if you have a second on your house and it's underwater, judges will say, hey, it's gone. The second doesn't exist anymore. There's no security interest. So these judges do this every day of the week. In the most recent case, in the Stockton case, mm-hmm. It was filed in Sacramento. And the judge who heard it is Judge Christopher Klein. He's a very smart judge, and I've been in front of him many times. And one of the principal arguments of PERS was, we're a sovereign entity. You can't do anything to us. And Judge Klein said, no, I don't quite buy that. The federal law trumps the state law. Then they said, you can't rewrite our contract because of some other provisions in the state law. And he says, no, we rewrite contracts all the time, so I can do that too. And then they said, well, there's a provision in the state law that says if you buy out of PERS, they get a lien on all your property to make sure you pay them. And he said, well, you may get a lien, but in bankruptcy law, we have a provision to wipe that lien out and make you unsecured. So basically, he said to PERS, I don't buy any of your arguments. I have the right to do all these things, and at least as I view it. And that's in a published decision. Now, it's a trial court decision, but it's there. To my knowledge, it hasn't been challenged or taken up to an appellate court level yet. Anywhere across the country.
Now, Mike, if I read that correctly, and I did read that particular ruling, he also made a reference to the fact that even though the municipality did not ask for forgiveness on those levels for the unfunded pension portion and so on, that he made it clear that they could have.
He did. When they talk about rewriting a contract, it's basically one is it's a settlement tool, because when he writes that, he's then hoping that PERS and the city will come to a settlement because he's showing his card, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But when they rewrite a contract, you can start with a whole blank slate. Other than having the same parties, you can change terms, you can change dates, you can change interest rates, you can change amounts owed, you can change all kinds of things.
Now, speaking of changing all kinds of things and courts, the Supreme Court, they have a couple situations up in front of them. Basically driven from a lot from San Diego. So San Diego came out a number of years back, I think it was 5 years back, and said, we're going to change the pension program going forward. And obviously the unions and CalPERS stepped up and said, oh, no, you can't do that. We have a California rule, the infamous California rule that says once you signed a once that person went to work for you, that's their contract moving forward and you can't change it. Well, the courts obviously on the lower level said, absolutely you can, as long as there's, you know, taking consideration what it is that you're doing for the employee and so on, and it's in the best interest, yes, you can. That is now being challenged. It's going all the way up. I'm hearing from a number of different people that Supreme Court's going to rule that it absolutely is going to be upheld, and San Diego is going to be able to switch from the pension to a 401k or somewhere on that premise, and the California rule is not going to apply the way it always has or has been in the past. Is that your understanding?
Generally speaking, it is. That would be a decision under state law, which would be unrelated to the bankruptcy view of the world, because the bankruptcy judge says CalPERS asserted that argument that we've got this state rule and you can't change it and this and that. And he said, yes, we can, because in the Constitution it says bankruptcy is a federal matter to be governed by the federal government, not the state government. So he said that's the supremacy clause, essentially, and you know, nice try, but I'm not going to buy that particular argument. But what Judge Klein also did in the Stockton case is that he said, even though I find I have the right and ability to do all these things, and CalPERS, you're wrong, however, the whole plan that you've presented, that's been presented to us, that's just one part of it. And I find that the whole plan in and of itself is a good plan, and that's the way life goes. So I'm going to approve it.
Well, and you've got a lot of bond companies out there that they have big attorneys too.
Well,
and at some point they're going to say, you know what, we don't want to take all the weight. We want to share that with CalPERS. And we think you got to be written down as well. So, hey, let's take a real quick one. Let's go to Billy Bob in Palo Cedro, PC, my hometown. Billy Bob, can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. What's up, brother?
Hey, great show. I'm very interested in what you guys are talking about. I can't believe the amount of corruption that's involved with all this, and so anyway, my only point is that when can we, as the city of Reading, decide that with this recall and everything else, all those guys, every one of them, ought to be shit canned. I'm sorry, but they're worthless. They're worthless creatures. They get paid $500 a month to screw us up. So anyway, that's my only thing I wanted to say. So
thanks, Billy Bob. Thanks, brother.
All right.
Well, yeah, that puts it pretty plainly. I think the simple fact is we're gonna go at this in pieces to answer your question, Billy Bob. Like we talked about with bankruptcy or the recall or anything, it's got to be done in a slow, methodical, well thought out way, right, to get us to a point where we can actually make the necessary changes. Back to bankruptcy, Mike, talk to us about what kind of things are actually considered. So let's imagine we have it up in front of the council. They need to vote on it. What are the things that what are they going to consider?
There's several requirements initially before you can even file. One is you have to be a municipality, which the city meets that requirement. Then it's got to be authorized by the city council by a vote. So that those were basically technical requirements that they would do. One of the big ones that you have to show is that you are insolvent.
Okay.
And there's magic, as in every law, there's words that describe it. But insolvency basically means that you either are not paying your debts as they come due, or you can't pay the debts as they come due. So, for instance, if you've got 12 months before we're deficit spending, do you have to be in deficit spending before you're insolvent? And one of the arguments PERS would make is that you're not insolvent yet, so you can't file. Mm-hmm. You're not eligible to file. If they win that just means you wait 6 months till you're not making your debts, and you go back again, and you go, okay, now I'm not paying them. Now I'm really insolvent. So that's not a... I call that a technical argument, not a substantive argument.
Okay.
And then when you say, why are you in, what does insolvent mean? If it means you can't pay your debts as they come due, you would look at the budget, and it's a simple numbers thing. You say, this is how much money comes in. This is my general fund obligation. These are my specific segregated fund obligations. What can I pay? What can I not pay? you know, they may say that the segregated funds aren't insolvent because there is enough money in there to pay those, but the general fund is insolvent, so does that mean the city's insolvent? And I mean, there's a lot of legal questions that you can get into.
Speaking of all these legal questions, what's this going to cost the city?
It's an open checkbook.
Yeah.
Being realistic, the lawyers will get it, and they'll tell them essentially in more complicated terms than what I'm saying is that we don't really know. There's a lot of unknown questions, and do you want to be the first one to go fight and find out? And the heart of the dispute or the problem is that the cities, by the time they can file, don't have the money to fight PERS, and they wind up losing. And so then you rely on the bond companies and some of these other ones.
Yeah.
And the bond company actually took an appeal on the Stockton case, and they said no. Because the whole plan was approved by the judge, it was all reasonable, and the fact that you don't like the outcome is so sad, too bad. You don't get to win.
Well, speaking of breaking away from things, let's take a break right now, and we'll come back, and we'll talk more about bankruptcy.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Ben Stevenson is our special guest host this morning, and you're hearing it on AM 1460 KCNR. Now back to We the People and our special guest host, Vince Stevenson.
Hey, guys. Let's bridge this a little bit more. When we left, we were talking about what we'd have to do to move the things forward on a bankruptcy if it ever got to that point. Hopefully we'll come up with a magical Pegasus who will fly us off to a land where we get all of our stuff paid for, and it'll all be great.
Let me just say, I'm not advocating they file bankruptcy. I mean, oh, no. It just gives some general...
No, we're just talking about all the what ifs. What would happen if we had to? And basically that's the idea, guys. I mean, at this stage, I had somebody come up to me in the last few days, and they said, "All right, so what about the marijuana idea? Should we be thinking about that?" And I said, "Well, you know, how would that work?" And they were like totally amazed, like, "Oh my God, I can't believe that you think that that's a consideration." And I said, "You know what? Do you realize the condition of our community right now? Our community is in trouble. So, you know what? Whatever the idea is, it can't be immediately excluded. Outside of selling our children, everything else is on the table, guys. And so basically, we're at a stage right now where, all right, so how much is the marijuana thing going to bring in, and how could we control it, and what can we do? I'm not saying I'm voting for it, but at the same time, I'm not saying I'm going to eliminate it right from the beginning either. And that's what we're doing today, is we're actually looking at some of these things like bankruptcy and saying, all right, what would that look like? How much would it hurt? We've decided to do this. The rumor's out there. What's it going to mean to our credit? What kind of things, if we did make this happen, would it have really any impact? It's one thing to have a bankruptcy where you have a significant event that actually caused it to occur. We had a big fire, you had an earthquake, you had whatever. And now you're having to find ways to wipe out that debt. It's something else when it's just poor spending and you're continually overspending past your budget. Well, guess what? There's only one real way to solve that kind of an issue. So, you know, so Mike.
Well, I see people in bankruptcy all the time, and they're in many. Let's take a medical situation where somebody gets sick, mm-hmm. which isn't their fault, and they're off work for 6 months, so they have no income coming in, and they want to use. They want to pay the medical providers because they're helping them, so they use their credit cards. And the next thing you know, they've got $40,000 or $50,000 run up on their credit cards, and they can barely afford the minimum payments. So bankruptcy is designed for people like that who have a one-time, unexpected situation, and they say you can wipe out your debt and be done with it. But then you get people who just spend more than they can afford, and they do it continually, and they wind up in the same situation, but not from a one-time unfortunate event. And to those people, you want to say from a financial planning basis, can you change the behavior that's caused this to occur?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can, then bankruptcy is an answer. If you can't, you'll just be coming back to bankruptcy again and again and again. And so you look at the city and you say, what has created these problems? It's really negotiation. It's what it's been over time, I think. And so you need to change some of the negotiations.
Sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? For those of you out there listening, here's a situation where it was just bad stuff, bad decisions. We're going to catch you after the hour. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Stay tuned for hour number two of We the People. Again, Ben Stevenson is sitting in for your regular hosts, Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff today. Bob Martin inviting you to keep it here for more of We the People on AM 1460, KCNR, Shasta, Reading.